can read it through. Can we talk a little bit longer about the territorial aspect of your training? What did you do when you arrived at the drill course?
Well, it was mostly your form course. That was the drill of that time, as it was from the 1914 war, you know. And we had the similar regiment uniform. The captain, he rode a horse. Of course, the lieutenant walked. But it was based on 1914 training. I mean, when we went on an exercise, we always won. Never the enemy. See, and we used to go out on the moors and have mock attacks with blank cartridges, things like that. But as I say, it was always us at one, never the enemy. And of course, we had the big, in the camp, we had the big Sawyer boilers. Now, they were the same style as they had from the Crimean War. The big Sawyer boilers, a big round boiler, and boil it in the top, you know. Now, the Germans, they had a Sawyer boiler on wheels, which they called a goulash cannon. And they used to march along the road, and their soup was getting cooked for them. Well, when we went on the march, we had to wait about cook setting up and cooking stuff.
In the drill hall itself, in the initial drill, was it done with the marching of the light infantry pace from the beginning?
Well, we were taught the light infantry pace and all that. So,
did the gradual build up to that pace? Or did it start right at the beginning? This is the pace you're in.
Well, usually, the only time you used that pace was ceremonial at the camp, or when they had a general parade in Durham City. The whole battalion used once a year to Durham Cathedral, march through the town, things like that. That was a special day, like.
As part of the rules of weapon, the rifle, exactly, was that different from other regiments in any way?
No. No.
Did you slow arms and present arms and so forth?
Yes. More or less the same. And
did you march with the rifle left on the shoulder?
Yes. Or on the strap, on the sling, yes. You know, when you're marching easy on a route march, it's on a sling on your back. See? Now, you had a shooting range in the drill hall below, and it just fired the 2-2. See? That was your training. Sort of thing, and then you went on to a large range up at Whitburn on the coast there.
How did you get from Whitburn to Whitburn?
Well, by buses, yeah. And that was set you off a weekend. You'd go there and you would stop overnight. Now, them buses at Whitburn at that time, they were built in the First War for the First War troops, and all you had on the ground was, you had a ground sheet, one blanket. You just lay down on the ground on the hard wooden floor, see? And I remember one night he came in, we woke up early on, this chap come in late, between two others. He'd been a bit worse for drink, and they just slung him down on his ground sheet, and then one of the fellas came in, he said, "He's a clever blooming corporal. He's not lying oblique to the line of fire." Anyway,
what's the kind of range that we're shooting over? The distance?
Oh, well, 1,000 yards and 500 yards. Oh, quite long range, you think. Then you're firing at butts, you know, out to sea. But you were firing into a big butt, and they used to dig into his butt afterwards and get the that's where it was. It was just, and me being a left-hander, I was dead awkward with the other fellas. They're all lying, as I see it, oblique to the line of fire, and I was lying across this way. Yes, yes, you did have a scorecard, and I didn't do too well, I hoped I would. But funny enough, a lot seemed to depend on the weather. On a bright day like this, you could see the target clear and seem nearer. See, and on a dull day, you didn't shoot so well. But they've told us that many tales, the old sweats, about the rifle kicking your shoulder off. Things like that, you know. And it wasn't so bad. And they used to say, when you're firing 100 metres, 100 yards, it's a lot worse firing 500, you know. It's hell of a kick. Well, that's the difference. It's just the same, isn't it?
Same bullet.
Right. Anyway,
you spend the weekend there.
You spend the weekend at Whitburn, yes. And you got... You got paid for that for the weekend. Yes, we had a few of those. I remember going to one up on the coast at Hart. And you were just sleeping under, well, two blankets. This was sort of wartime training, this. Just two blankets. And it absolutely poured that weekend. And we were very dry, under just two blankets fastened together with pins and pegged down to the ground.
What kind of training would you do on the weekend?
Well, that particular weekend, I was put on the 3-inch mortar. See, it was just a new weapon just brought out. And I was pretty good at it. Surveying experience, because you had the 336, your little, three, you know, 336 degree, and your sights on the, you had a little collimator sight you looked through, it was just like looking through an inverted V to look out onto your area, and then you fired rounds and you bracketed them. You got beyond it and then you worked in front of it and threw on. You didn't hit on. They'd give you an estimate. Well, you'd see it's about 500 yards or, but you were only guessing because the dead ground and things like that. Now, the course for that, we went to Catwick for a weekend. Went out on the moors at Catwick. So that's
how many men made up a mortar team?
About 16, I think.
And how were they divided up?
Yeah, that's a better.
Did you have your fire with your range and your fire this time?
Oh yes.
No,
the firers and the aimers stayed there. And the others handed the up to them.
North.
And then you had to dig it in sometimes. You know, you dig the mortar into a hole, sort of thing. And you always carried little entrenching tools for to dig the mortar plate out. Every round dug it deeper, the recoil dug it deeper into the ground. So you had to dig it out after. Oh, fairly, I would think, yes. Well, we all did, yes. But apparently, I can't remember seeing the mortar when we went to France. As I say, I was medical only. That's the usual army way, isn't it?
Well, the drill hall would take you up the basic drills.
More or less, yes. They did have dances and, you know, occasions. Christmas parties.
Social
side, yes. Now, the drill hall just had, I can't remember if it had any central heating, as far as I remember, just had a round stove at one end and a round stove at the other. That's all the heat. You know.
Two meters
a week. Well, about 7 or 9, I think. And then afterwards, after the drills, they had a pot of tea and two biscuits. Now, I think you paid sixpence for the whole drill season. And you got a pot of tea and two biscuits all that time, you know. But some chaps missed a lot of drills, you know, once they'd gone through.
Did you have to put in a certain
A basic guy, about 20, I think. That was over the year. Yeah.
And if you less than that, what happened? You kicked out?
No, it was you more or less had to get your bounty. See, and you got a bounty on Armistice Day. Because you marched the armistice and then up the drill hall. They had a bit of a feed with pies and bottles of beer and things. And then you paid out your bounty, see? And if they missed the drills, or you missed your shooting, that was all about your bounty. And nobody wanted that in those days.
You know how much the bounty was then?
Yeah, I can't remember. Probably about £5 or £6. It wasn't very much. It went up a good bit after the war. Well, there wasn't anything much. I remember one chap in the camp, he struck an officer. Well, all I could do was confine him to camp. Well, he was only there for a fortnight. And I don't think he even stayed in the camp. There wasn't really any hard and fast rule as they could do with a regular soldier.
Just basically your civilians.
Yes, more or less.
If you did they check on your kit on a regular basis to see that you were keeping?
Oh, you had kit inspections, yes.
Was that a weekly or a monthly thing?
Oh, it was done at camp. All you turned up at your drill night was just your webbing, your light webbing. See, you didn't carry all your kit every time, just your light webbing.
How did you keep it clean?
Well, you had a blanco wood. And you bought your own blanco, and you had to scrub it, wash it, scrub it, and then blanco wood, and then go up for inspection. So that was before you went to camp. The blanco had to be done. So you were all turned out the uniform sort of thing. And all your brasses had been cleaned. That was the thing, you had to have your brasses polished.
I never asked you, and I should have done, what did your mother feel like joining the territorial army?
Well, I don't think she was too happy. We're only there for defence purposes. If anything happens, we'd not be going abroad. That was the general idea. And then nothing was going to happen.
So there was no talk of an impending war?
No, no. As a matter of fact, they were making fun of the Nazis and the Hitler Youth and all that sort of thing. Nobody thought anything about them at that time.
Was digging trenches part of the training as a territorial before the war?
Not really, but no, I can't remember digging any trenches. But the idea was trench warfare in the books and things like that.
And you did say that was kind of First World War training, or training based on the First World War?
Training based on the First World War.
Did you ever, as a territorial before the war, did you ever work with tanks or other units, support units?
No, just all infantry at the camp. Of course, you had your veterinary corps, because there was quite a few horses, and your band with the red coats and things like that. But no, it was basically infantry units. We never saw any tanks or anything.
Did you go on any route marches?
Quite a few. Oh, quite a few route marches. See, that was the one where you're allowed to smoke a pipe after the first one.
Were they gradually built up from the point of view of distance?
Yes, now in the good weather, that's what you used to do on drill nights sometimes. Go on a short march, you know, and then lengthen it. And of course, when you were at camp, you go on quite long ones. Quite a long. The band would march you out of camp for about half a mile and then leave you. And you want to carry on and come back.
What would you carry with you on the route?
Well, water and haversack rations. Probably some cheese sandwiches or something like that in your haversack at the side here. That was what you would sort of have when you come back at night and probably have a meal at night.
Were your feet examined when you returned to camp after the march, or returned to your base?
Well, tell the truth, I can't remember much about that. Because we were mostly marching on grass, you know. So, but in the Second World, when we were and we were breaking the young recruits in then, I examined all my feet. Because being the medical orderly, I had to dress them all.
Can we just go back to camp? You said it was at Antonia.
Yeah.
It was the camp that you attended. And it was a brigade camp.
Yes. No, the 6th, 9th and 8th.
What time of the year was the camp?
Well, in the summer, I think it would be about August, I think. And it was a fortnight.
And how did that equate with your work? Did you give time off work?
Oh, yes. Yes, a little time off work. As a matter of fact, any territory that comes, the Hatu, the government used to send a note and the Hatu. And after the war, they paid you for going, some firms, on top of what you got paid for territorial camp. But it used to be, before the war, the only holiday a lot of fellas got. They even had the wives coming to the camp on the weekend. So, you know, it was the only holiday they got, really.
And this presumably was one of the reasons you either made the undertaking to get this holiday.
Get this holiday, yeah.
Mm-hmm. At the camp, the 2 weeks that we were there, we had paid the same rate for those 2 weeks as a regular soldier.
Well, more or less, yes. Yes. No, I'm trying to think.
Was it a tented camp?
Yes, bell tents. Now that was the thing that changed with the war. The bell tents were white pre-war. Now, as soon as the war started, they were khaki coloured. See, there was no such thing in 39 and 38 as camouflage on the ground. You were camouflage from the enemy wearing khaki, naturally. But you had no bomb from aircraft. As a matter of fact, the training was that a group of infantry fire was worse to an aircraft than any other. And of course, the aircraft was way above it, the modern aircraft. And you didn't fire at an aeroplane. You had to stand there and wait till you were given the order. And if it was on the left, you turned left. And if it was on the right, you turned up. That was the drill. And you just standing in a platoon in the middle of the road. And that was mostly the most deadly fire that an aircraft got.
How many men would sleep in the tent?
Well, it could, apparently, there was supposed to be 24 segments. Now, in the First World War, I told the 24 to a tent, you know, places like Paris, and places like that. But I should imagine round about a dozen, I think. You weren't crowded.
Where did you put them?
Well, you had a big box. We had a big box that made. You bought them. This big little box was about this size. Look. And that went at, right at this head of the tent. In a padlock on, and your equipment was in there. And you change your clothes and things. Of course, prior to that, you just have your kit in a kit bag and put that as a pillow for the sleep on.
You mentioned the belly cooking stove that they have, the cook stove.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of food were you getting in at the camp itself? Is it good?
All wholesome food, yes. Quite a bit of meat, you know, boiled and boiled and served out as a big stew. It was mostly a thick stew, a meaty stew that you got.
And where did your food go? How did your carry go? What did you have to eat?
Well, you had your mess tins for things like that. Now, the pre-war mess tin that we were issued with, the D-Dixie, it was superior to the one that had this war. The one that had this war was a power affair, I think. It was just like it was a flat open box like that. See, all the European armies had the billy can with the lid on. That was a pretty useless effort. It was far better, the old-fashioned one, like a D-Dixie. You could get a soup in it, and then you had the handle. It could be used as a little frying pan. Things like that, or have it full of spuds. It was far, far better. I don't know why the change to that sort of Dixie at all. I don't think it was any very big success at all.
I presume you're lined up for the meeting?
Oh, yes. Yes, you're lined up. You went past the coop, into the coop house, and out again. And then they had dining tents,
big
marquees, where you went into.
So you're
undercover,
you're eating in the open.
Oh no. But weekend camps, of course, you're eating in the open. Things like that. I remember we were at on the East Coast one time, and you walked in, and when you got your cereal on the morning, you would walk out of the camp and would blow off
your plate,
the cereal with a breeze from the sea. That was it.
What time would the rally be in town?
I think it was 6 in the morning, I think.
Was that by bugle?
Bugle, all right. All the hand bugle. That proper bugle, yeah.
Do you recall a typical day of a territorial soldier in town? The kind of activities you would have from a rally onwards?
Well, you had a canvas with you, you know, a canvas suit, jacket and trousers. And you might get line up on the morning, you might get detail of duties. You two go and poop up for tilt, pinch sports, or something like that, you know. And various duties you get sent to. Cleaning out. Well, there was no real hogs, but, you know, cleaning round the camps, any litter or anything like that. All sorts of various things you get to do. And the rest of you, well, of course, you were out on exercises. These were just ones that was on set on fatigues.
So this four-legged camp is an opportunity to get bigger exercises, more activities.
More activities, I give you an insight into army life, see. I mean, you on a drill night and that, you were drinking with a sergeant, and he wasn't an officer in figure, see. You didn't think much about it, but when the stripes used to count at camp, you knew, and especially in the regulars, you found out about that.
Or
regimental type, yes.
And therefore, presumably people who didn't come up to scratch work on it.
Oh, yes, they would be put on dirty fatigues or something like that.
So the fatigues would be put in the time would the day finish in the camp?
Well,
you mean to relax after
that? Evening mainly, then you're finished. Unless you're on guard duty. See, then you stay up all night.
And you've been trained to this guard drill, have you?
Not really. It was just being smart, really. Oh yes, you change the guard drill and you use your commander, guard commander, and, you know, folks who goes there. You were taught all that sort of thing. And I remember thinking, I hope I get through this war without doing a guard, which I did.
Exercises that you were doing, were they again based on World War One experience?
I would think so, yes. There wasn't any use to this. I mean, bayonet training. Of course, that was early wartime training. Saxon bayonet drill, things like that.
And did the army put a great deal of emphasis on bayonet drill?
Yes, that sort of thing. They were still talking 1914 ideas. And the French army was the same.
With your own exercises at this camp, at Annick, where you were, you said you did attacking movements and so forth.
Yes.
Were they based on an advancing line of men with rifles and bayonets held up?
That sort of thing, yes.
It wasn't fire and movement.
No. You shouted, just charge. Rush in with your rifle. Mind the Germans were no better in this second war.
And after the camp, I think we've actually talked about the fact that you're allowed to go off, after the day actually, at the end of the day, you're allowed to go off into the local town.
Oh yes, we were allowed to go in and it had a sort of shuttle bus that used to come back and forth, took you into town. Of course, you had your, that's another duty you sometimes get. You had an armed sleeve, regimental police, and you'd go into town, a group of you, and see if anybody's misbehaving, drunk, or making a nuisance of themselves.
Did you recall any problems?
No, I didn't have any, but I suppose there would be with drunkenness, a few, you know. And you'd just manhandle them back to camp, and then just let them sleep it off.
Camp would be really the first opportunity where you were very closely involved with men and sleeping together in tents and so forth. Did you cope with that okay?
No bother. But, well, you're sleeping in bell tents with the scouts.
Because you had that scout.
That scout trail behind you.
You joined in 1938, and you were talking briefly about people escorting the war. When did you become aware that there was problems coming from the country?
Well, they changed one of the battalions. I think it was the 9th, I think, or was it the 9th or the 7th? 7th Allied, and made them into anti-aircraft. And they were training on the coast with the guns months before the war actually broke out. And that gave you sort of an inkling. And then, in the middle of 38, or the middle of 38, or towards the end of 38, they started recruiting. And then early 39, they had big recruiting parades.
Were you involved with those?
Oh, yes. We used to march through the towns with the bands and double up and double the 2 years. And then, of course, at that time, you had the militia were called up, the first militia. See, well, that was about my age. And chaps that went to school with us in my age, well, they thought getting into territorials will dodge this militia thing. They didn't realise they were going to be dragged in any case.
But that didn't work.
That didn't work, no.